Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
We are with episode 232 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aiden Morgan.
It is I.
It is you.
It is me.
I survived the, I don't know, what are we calling it, a heat apocalypse here?
The heat dome, yeah.
Which actually we recorded during last week's episode.
We did.
Recorded during that.
And it seemed, well, it never, and it kind of made its way over here, but it didn't get as bad as it could have, so for that I am very pleased.
That is good. I do not wish it on anyone. Oof. Although weirdly, I ended up spending the last and worst day of it. That Monday, I ended up spending like half an hour standing outside my driveway because I was getting my new washer and dryer, and I was chatting with the guys while they were assembling stuff. They actually insisted on setting it up, installing all the hoses and all that in the driveway in some shade, because as they put it, they have to spend all day out in this, and if they get used to cooler, it's going to be way worse.
That kind of makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. Why I decided to be an idiot and just stand out there and chat with them, I don't know.
Solidarity.
I didn't even think. I was just like, I'll just keep chatting with them, it's fine. Because there is that thing of like, I mean, it's not that it's fun to stand out there and all that, but like, I don't know. Yes, it was like 113, 116, somewhere in there. But I was in some shade, and I'm just standing, like, I'm not exerting any real energy, you know?
Right.
So it was just like, it was just oppressive, but it wasn't damaging. And I'm, you know, drinking a lot of water and otherwise staying fairly cool. So anyway. Stuff, things, TV shows.
Ooh, yes. Those things we like.
Movies involving Chris Pratt's face.
I
have a very specific
faces.
Note here.
Oh, yes. The many faces.
Remind me
of
to
Chris
talk
Pratt.
About Chris Pratt's face in Tomorrow War.
Did you watch it?
I have
well?
Not.
Okay.
I was thinking about it because it also has what's her face?
Yvonne Strahovski?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I do like her and stuff usually.
Yeah. And yeah. No, she's fine.
Then I just kept hearing, like, oh, it's really big and dumb, and I'm not a real big Chris Pratt fan these days.
No, me neither.
Because I still like Parks and Rec, but, like, he's just kind of weird. And then your note was just like, you know what, maybe I should just not. So I figured I'd let you tell me whether I should watch it.
Okay. Well, I will. We can talk about it. Maybe we can talk about a couple other things first, and then we can come around, and I can get into the Tomorrow War.
All right. What would you like to talk about first, then, sir?
Let's start with some Loki. Let's start with talking about the Loki.
There was some Loki. The Loki of it all.
There was a fourth episode of said show.
Yes, where there, you know, I mean, part of it felt very obvious. Like, was there anyone who was actually surprised that the, and like, obviously full spoilers here, that the timekeepers were just fucking robots? Like, was there anyone surprised by this?
I can't imagine. I mean,
like, maybe
just
outside of the Lokis, you know. Well, Loki and Sylvie.
Exactly. Like, one of the very first things, I think, maybe in the first episode, one of the first comments I ever heard anybody say was, "I bet the timekeepers are robots." And
right.
Lo and behold, yeah, the timekeepers are not. They are. It's the great and terrible wizard, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, there's somebody else behind the scenes. So I'm kind of glad we got that out of the way. And I'm not sure if they played it as a reveal too much. Obviously, they had to for the characters. But it wasn't, I don't think they expected anyone to be like, what?
Yeah.
There were bigger surprises in this episode, which tells me that they knew that the
exactly.
Timekeeper revelation wasn't a huge deal.
One thing I think is interesting, and this is kind of that like playing guesses when you have behind the scenes, and not really behind the scenes anymore than anyone else, but when you have like meta information.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Ravonna being tied to Kang in the comics.
Uh-huh.
You would, at least I would like normally be like, okay, well maybe Kang is behind all this. Time travel, Kang, this whole thing. Which would make sense, except if he's going to be the villain in Ant-Man, you don't introduce him in Loki.
Yeah,
you might say
like
his name, but right. I can't imagine we're going to see him. And if you just say his name and then don't see him, it's going to be a really weak reveal.
Yeah.
So I feel like they can't do the Kang thing. Weirdly. Because they don't want to do his big reveal in a TV show.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if they're going to be, if they're going to have it in a movie, yeah, it seems it would be odd to have it in the show. I think you're right. So whom do you think is behind the
I think
TVA?
It could just be her, and she might could even be. Hint that she's working for somebody type of thing, but we right. just won't get Kang. Or we're going to get Immortus. And again, there's two episodes left. I don't know that we could deal with Immortus. The joke of Immortus being, of course, that he is Kang from a different point in the time stream.
Oh, I did not know
yeah,
this.
There's, what's the other one? So weirdly in the comics, Kang is at least three different characters. Four, I guess, technically. What is the other one's name? So he's eventually Immortus, right? And he is also Ramatut.
Okay.
Like he, you know, at some point goes back in time and becomes Ramatut. In the far future, he's Immortus. I mean, he's from the far future, but, you know, in our timeline type of thing.
Yeah.
He eventually becomes Immortus, who's screwing with things. For a while there, he's Kang, who's just interested in becoming the best warrior. You know, Immortus is kind of chilled out. And for the Young Avengers, Kang, as a teenager, comes back in time and poses as Iron Lad.
Okay.
Because he doesn't want to eventually turn into his older evil self because he knows about it.
Interesting.
Yeah,
that's right.
I do appreciate that Marvel just kind of goes, you know, this guy travels in time. Let's fuck with that. I mean, there is a chance that we could just get Immortus. And that could be a fun way to kind of not do Kang and do Kang, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, then they'd have to announce the actor and all, because you can't have a different guy.
Yeah, I mean, it also could be like you say, it could just be there are no timekeepers, but Ravonna Renslayer is simply like, yep, no, I guess I'm running it now. And, you know, there's never been anyone behind the curtain.
Right.
I mean, this is also a possibility.
It is.
So, but
they have a lot of options on the table right now, which is interesting.
Yes. And I have to say, I did enjoy the end stinger. Once again, I feel we're running into the Marvel issue of this little bit at the end is more intriguing than everything that came before. But it was still a lot of fun seeing the other Lokis.
Right.
Including Kid Loki, which I thought, I was like, okay, Now we're into some Young Avenger business.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the whole, does this mean that everyone who is removed ends up in a pocket universe with all their alternate selves? Or is there just one?
I was thinking it might be that the other Loki simply pulled Loki out. You know, that other people who get pruned. My thinking, of course, because Mobius gets pruned. My thinking is that they're just going to go back and find him, like, but as a variant in the timeline and, like, on a jet ski, metaphorically, maybe.
Sure.
And pull
him
from there.
Or the Lokis also plucked him out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's possible, too. I'm not sure if everybody who's pruned dies or whether they get sent somewhere, but it would make, I don't know, it makes a little more sense to me that, like, Loki's a special case. But who knows?
Right. So again, it just keeps opening fun doors.
Yes. And they're now we've got two episodes to close those doors. So
right.
Hopefully they can. I mean,
close them enough.
Close them enough. Yeah. Marvel never closes a door. They cannot.
Well,
they
I mean,
have to leave it.
They have to
bit.
Because again, like this has to, you know, this is going to fold into the Doctor Strange movie.
Exactly.
At least. Who knows what else it'll fold into. But it's going to at least fold into a Doctor Strange movie. So they can't, you know, they actually have to open new doors while they close a few of them.
Mm, yeah. And I have to say, I am really like every time they put another sort of like puzzle piece of the Young Avengers together,
yeah.
I am more and more excited because I think they're just they're great sort of like, you know, ushering in like literally a next generation of heroes, and I'm really looking forward to seeing that sort of all come together.
Yeah, no, and I like the way that they're doing it. You know, not giving them their own movies, but they're introducing them as like side bits, so that you have the Avengers effect of they can eventually pull a movie and go, here are all these characters, and if you don't know them at all, there'll be enough there. But if you do, you're like, oh yeah, all these cool characters.
Yeah. And I think people are going to be like actually sort of hyped for Young Avengers.
Yeah.
Because I know, and it's weird because even with previous Marvel properties, when which were originally the news was met with indifference. Like, you know, nobody gave a shit about Ant-Man originally. And then nobody cared about Guardians of the Galaxy when the news first broke because nobody knew what they were. We're seeing it happen now with stuff like Eternals. But for some reason, I feel like the whole apathy towards Eternals is... That feels destined to, like, follow through.
I mean...
I don't know.
We'll see.
We'll see. I don't know. I'm just talking out of my ear with this.
No, I get it though. It's a whole thing. But yeah, no, the Young Avengers thing feels like there's actual movement there, right?
Yes. Yep. I love the idea of Hayley Steinfeld as Kate Bishop. I think that's great casting. And especially if they're going to go with sort of Matt Fraction sort of Hawkeye stuff. I think I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Sorry. We don't stop. This will end up in the podcast, but just so people know,
okay.
Zencaster just kind of burped and stopped recording, which is fine.
Okay.
Because we record in Audacity anyway.
This is true.
But it also means that the clock is no longer running.
Oh.
So let me just set a timer.
That's fine. Remember, Audacity has a timer as well, so.
Yeah, but I can't see that one as easily.
Fair enough.
It's promising.
It is promising.
And there are so many different versions of Young Avengers that it's like there's the original one, which has Iron Lad. There's the Gillen and McKelvey one, which is more popular, just because Gillen and McKelvey were more popular, that has Kid Loki.
Right.
None of them have Ms. Marvel, but they're about to, like, so they're just, you know.
Yeah. I mean, the movies...
They're going to make it work.
They will make it work. And here's... I remember earlier in the week when I emailed you about this. Because after I watched the episode, I was fooling around on the internet. So I went to the AV Club and read the review. And it just really rubbed me the wrong way.
Okay.
Because I think there are two kinds of criticism, especially of TV these days, that really drive me nuts. And this one embodied both those kinds of criticism. And I mean, when I've written about TV, I've done this as well. So I'm not immune. But it did two things. One, it's the reviewer is Carolyn, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Said. Seems to be grading the show against an imaginary show that she wants to see.
Right. There is a lot of criticism that bases it on what you wanted instead of what you got.
Right. And it's especially nonsensical. I find that sort of ranking or sort of criticizing Marvel shows like this just doesn't make a lot of sense until you see the whole thing, you don't really know what they're going for. So making pronouncements just seems seems a little fatuous. And the other kind of criticism is when the critic sort of seems to, the underlying message is, I'm smarter than this show. And I hate that so much.
Yeah. Not my favorite.
I'm just like, you're not smarter than a show. You're just a person. A show is a show. Stop that. Just try to take the work of art on its own terms instead of you know, making pronouncements from on high. It is just irritating beyond belief.
Yeah, and it's hard to do sometimes because you can especially when you can see clearly the intent and see how they missed what they were obviously going for. It's very hard not to judge it on that, and you kind of have to. But at that point, are you judging it on what it should have been, or are you judging it on what it is? See what I'm saying?
Yeah. And there's a kind of criticism where you can sit there and pick apart a work, or there's a kind of criticism where you can sit there and say, well, what is it doing? What does it want to do?
Right.
How does it do it? What are some ideas that we can talk about? Like that's the kind of criticism I'd much prefer. But I know the other kind, especially when you're writing to a deadline, is easy to fall into.
Yes. I do also think that there's a thing that's, it's hard to quantify, but you know it when you see it. When it's done, when picking something apart is done in good faith.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, like, versus just picking it apart because that's my job. I'm a critic. I should be critical. And it's like, that's not what that means. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Weirdly, and I don't know that I think we're pretty much done with Loki, yes?
I think we're done with Loki.
That actually makes me think of, which I mentioned to you, the Fast and Furious stuff.
Oh, yes.
Because one of the great weird joys of the Fast and Furious stuff is they are vaguely, and fairly, I'd say, actually, critic-proof.
Yeah, I should hope so.
Not that they're all fantastic movies. I still think, you know, 2 is okay, and 4 is a goddamn mess.
Fair enough.
But past that, you know, love them. And I enjoy the hell out of 2 and 4 anyway. But Hobbs and Shaw doesn't quite work as a Fast and Furious movie. It works fine as a, like, late 2010s, like, action-y movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
It works out perfectly fine.
Yeah.
The problem is it's supposed to be a Fast and the Furious movie. Obviously, you know, less car stuff and more just focusing on, well, Hobbs and Shaw. But it never quite sings in the way the Fast and Furious movie does, right?
Fair enough.
You would agree?
I would agree.
Okay. And you can't really just talk that up to the cast, I would argue.
Yeah, I just think the Fast and the Furious movies have a very particular tone and a very particular formula that makes it work. And Hobbs and Shaw, it's a fine movie, like as a big dumb action film with you know with Johnson and Statham, but yeah, no, it doesn't quite have the same sort of magic. It seems like a footnote or something,
right? And I think I know what happened.
Do tell.
There is, and having just watched all 8 Fast and Furious movies, there is a raw sincerity to them.
Okay.
They are, again, they're done in good faith, right? Like, they know what they are. They don't wink at you. Like, even as much as they're doing incredibly stupid things, and sometimes even the characters will be like, that's stupid, how are we still alive? And you're like, yeah, that's kind of funny. Like, but they're not winking?
No.
You know, they're knowing. And it's a subtle difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Hobbs and Shaw gets it backwards. I think they wink a bunch, going, look at us, we're in a Fast and Furious movie, that means anything goes! Instead of, and there's a lack of sincerity, and they're playing broader.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Like, it's one of those weird things that, like, the Fast and Furious movies, in terms of actual character, don't play broadly for the most part. They play obvious, they play wide, but not broad, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yes, you know, these characters are ridiculous, and, like, Roman is ridiculous, but he's not playing to the cheap seats, he's playing to his friends.
Precisely.
Whereas Hobbs and Shaw is very much playing to the cheap seats. Huh. And there's nothing wrong with that in a general action movie, but in a Fast and the Furious movie, it misses that magic spark. Because it stops feeling like a bunch of friends having fun and letting you watch them have fun, right, and starts being a spectacle that you are being allowed to witness.
Okay. I think some would say it's a subtle distinction, but I don't think it's subtle at all. I mean, it's a very, how do I put it? I mean, it makes a huge difference in the experience. Yeah.
Yes. And that's the thing is, it, you know, you feel like it shouldn't, right? Like, I even felt like it shouldn't at first, and I was trying to figure out what was quote unquote wrong with the movie, right? Like, why isn't this clicking for me quite as hard? And that's when I realized that okay. Yeah, it's that subtle little change makes all the difference in the world.
Exactly.
And I think that's my problem with 4, frankly, is that 4 is, as much as, you know, plot happens in these movies, in 4, plot happens, and part of the plot that just magically starts happening changes character in a way that doesn't happen in any other movies. All the other movies, like, the character change, and there is character change and growth besides, you know, they go from stealing TV VCR combos in the first one to international spies in, like, 5 movies.
pretty good.
And we know that, like, the space between 1 and 4, for instance, is only 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we're explicitly told that. So, sure. But, like, despite that, I don't know, it just... There's a lot of shift between, like, well, we have to get these characters to a place so that they're all friends and they're all good with each other and, like, family.
Right.
And they weren't. So there's it happens so fast that there's a little bit of forcing and the plot starts to take over to shape the characters.
Right.
Not hard. Not enough to break it. But enough that you start noticing at the edges, and that's why I feel like it's probably the weakest of the core. That's just my theory, as someone who's watched these movies way too often.
fair enough.
Anyway. Kids don't watch Fast and Furious movies as often as I do. I might have a problem. It's their weird comfort food. Like, I just turn them on, but whenever I am, I'm just like, I should just watch, like, Fast and Furious, like, 5 or 6, because I love them. And I'm like, I don't want to start there. I'll just start with 1. You know?
You know, I'm now really curious. It's been so long since I've seen the first one.
It's still a great Point Break remake.
Nice. Yeah, that's exactly what it is, and in a good way.
Yeah, no, and that thing is like, and like, I have way more appreciation for 2 now than I used to. I've always loved 3. 3 is just a fun movie, and then I said 4 is kind of a little bit of a wobble, but it gets you to 5, so who cares?
Right.
Yeah, no, I tend to, and like, I mean, not like I watch them like every other week, but like, I don't know, about once a year, I just start with the first one again. I just go all the way through.
So, and you know, then we've got yet another one.
I know. I will eventually get to see that.
Yeah, I was thinking that might be, I haven't been in a movie theater in quite some time now, so that might be it.
Yeah, sadly, I was actually, like, I was planning on it. I was like, oh, I could go. Like, I can't go opening weekend because it's going to be, like, still feeling too crowded. But, you know, like, I'm off Friday. I could totally go, like, for showing. It should be empty. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, I have to work that Friday after all. And it was also 4th of July weekend. So then that was going to be this weekend. I'm just like, no. And I'm like, maybe I can go next weekend. I'm like, no, because now all restrictions have been removed out of Oregon.
Oh, okay. That's
so now
great.
I'm just like, I mean, cases are still dropping here. Like, pretty much daily. They are on a downward trend. But I'm still just like, I'm really not up for a movie theater at this point, which sucks.
Yeah, our restrictions are dropping in about a week.
Okay.
So,
luck with that.
We too are experiencing a downward trend. I just think
it's still premature.
I think it's still premature. I think our government is just sick of it. And,
right. Well, no, capitalism will kill us all. And this is like, exactly. If you've ever wanted proof of that in your life, here it is. Like, if you did not understand yet that you matter less than capitalism, welcome to the party.
Exactly. Like, climate change is too slow, although it's also quick. Right. This should be like an instructive, like, case study, the pandemic, and just... Here's how capital conspires to murder you.
Yep.
So enjoy.
So anyway, there was a Flash episode. I know that you're probably way behind on Flash.
Yeah. Still. What's tell me about this Flash episode?
So it doesn't matter. Like, that's the thing. It's like the main plot of the episode. Most of the subplots of the episode. Whatever. Who cares? It's like Godspeed. There's many of them. It seems that there's like a Godspeed clone Android Civil War. I don't even fucking know what they mean anymore. I don't care. It's a fine show, whatever. The effect, however, of, like, they lock down Star Labs with a force field, and there's, like, six, like, Godspeeds, and they're all awkwardly punching this force field, and you know these extras are just like, okay, we all have to stop at the same point, but they're, like, all really rigid because they're trying to hit the same point. It is really actually unintentionally funny every time they cut to it.
Damn.
But, you know, a couple episodes we had, like, Iris and Barry are going to start trying to have a kid, and this episode, like, Barry's asleep, and he dreams that XS comes back from the future, and she's like, it's okay, and he's like, what? Iris must be pregnant. And I'm like, dude, it wasn't like she actually came back, it was a dream.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, you have prophetic dreams, like, that's not a thing.
this is not a Flash thing. Up
the Speed Force doesn't come to you in your dreams, this has never been a thing. But he then, like, he spends the entire episode with, like, they're trying to play this comedy of errors of, like, he's trying to keep it secret while he's trying to figure out how to, like, test for the pregnancy because the metagene means they can't just use a normal pregnancy test.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I'm like, but she isn't the meta. It's like, but the baby will be, I guess. And it's like, what? Why is super speed now a meta thing? Because it wasn't before. Okay. But they try to play this comedy of errors. Like, someone walks in and, oh no, have they figured it out? Hee hee. Like, kind of like a farce, except it doesn't play. And so it's just these really painfully awkward scenes that are all just based on Barry's being dumb.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
And then, of course, at the end, Iris isn't pregnant, and he gets really disappointed. I'm like, what? And, to make it weirder, this episode and last episode, Kenneth Patton wasn't in.
Oh.
And word has it she took, like, a mental health break for a couple episodes.
Hmm.
Now, I'm not saying this is why. I'm not saying she doesn't need one. But also, they are in contract negotiation for everyone for the 8th season. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yep.
But they had to play this entire thing of, like, you know, are they pregnant with him being like, oh, well, also, Iris feels sick. So he's just calling her and leaving voicemail or, like, yelling upstairs to her.
Ooh, yikes.
Because she's not okay in the episode. And it just, it made it all so much stranger. Because after a while, like, I swear to God, I started being like, did he just kill Iris? And he's, like, really trying to fucking cover it? Being like, no, she's sick and maybe pregnant. Like, it just really felt weird.
Whew. That is yeeks.
It was just so bizarrely awkward consistently. Also, they have this whole thing where, like, they pump out this noise at one point to help confuse the Godspeeds, and suddenly Team Flash is winning, and it's like, you know, Frost and Chilblain, don't worry about that, fighting, like, a bunch of these, you know, Godspeeds, and they're like, but they're just, like, kicking them and punching them. I'm like, you have powers.
Right.
Like, freeze them in place so you don't have to keep punching these same guys, because eventually that's going to wear on. There we are, now you're losing the fight. Like, why did we forget we had powers today? What happened?
I love it when a show sort of, like, for some reason, there's always, when a show runs long enough, like a genre show, there's always an episode where everything seems to go out the window. Like,
yeah.
Long-standing rules. And I've brought this up before, but I love the... There's a Season 7 Buffy episode when one character is eyeing up, like, giving Spike, like, fuck you eyes, like, through the rearview mirror of his car while Spike's in the back seat. I'm like...
As if he could see them?
Yeah. Like, you know he's a vampire. Did the writers of the show forget basic vampire rules?
Okay, that, first of all, I've told you, like, my problem with the whole vampire mirror thing, right? Why I hate it in modern vampire fiction?
I don't think that you have.
It's actually, it's one of those weird things, like, I know people who are just always obsessed whenever they see, like, gold in a movie and it's not, like, really, really heavy. It just drives them quietly insane.
Right.
This is my drives me quietly insane thing that I'm just petty about, and I can't help it. Just so you know.
Fair enough.
The whole vampire mirror myth is based on the fact that mirrors used to be backed with silver. It was a silver thing.
Oh, right. You have told me that.
Yeah, and right. That's not the case anymore, so vampires should totally show up. And also the whole, like, vampires don't show up on film. Like, why not? Like, what? The mirrors, what are you even doing? But my favorite use of it is still True Blood, because they established vampires can't be seen with mirrors. And if you remember, like, the 6th season, I think it was... And they're, like, all going to this compound, they're checking for vampires, and they use these mirrors on poles to check under the car for vampires, and I'm like,
Did you forget?
That's, guys? anyway, random thoughts, next Friday, the 9th, Leverage Redemption comes out. on IMDb TV, which if you can either go to IMDb TV, I think there's an app, but you can also just go to Amazon Prime. You don't need an Amazon subscription. It is free to watch with ads. In fact, if you do have Amazon Prime, you still can't watch it without ads. You're shit out of luck. It is the only way to watch it.
That's okay. I will make that
right. I will suffer through the ads for some leverage.
I mean, what was I watching? I watched a show called Intergalactic, and they had, it was so weird because they have ad breaks, but really defined ad breaks. It's from BBC, and it was just strange. It's even strange to watch a show that stops, you know, to say, here's where the ads go. I'm like, that's a nice breather.
We watch enough shows, like, I'm used to a good act out. Like, yeah.
For some reason with Intergalactic, there was something about it. It wasn't just like a clear act break, but they, you know, the title card flashed up and then the screen went to black.
Mm.
And so I was like, oh, ads. That's right. So
yeah, there was some show I was watching, I can't remember what it was now, that was weirdly meta about that. Like, but wasn't trying, it was trying to be meta, but it was also not. As in, it was meta, but they weren't acting like it was meta.
Oh.
But every now and then something would happen. Maybe it was even Legends. And it was just like some characters would be like, and act out.
Yep.
Like every now and then.
Right.
It was weird. Anyway. Sorry, my brain is spacey all over the place. But yes, we also did have Legends, which I really don't care that you kind of spoiled for. That was funny, though.
I was like,
fuck, I should watch Legends. I actually had the thought right before I got that email, I should watch Legends before Aiden mails me about Legends. And I was like, I'll get to it tomorrow. And then you're like, hey, this was really funny. I'm like, yep, should have done that. But no, I also don't give a shit. Like, no, you can't spoil Legends. There's nothing you can do to spoil that show.
I don't think so. Yeah, I mean, just giving people, like, the information about what happens is really nothing compared to the actual execution and experience of, like, watching an episode of Legends. Because it's always just more bizarre than you think.
The end of this episode, just to jump all the way to the end of the episode, actually caught me. Because, you know, they have the cowboy who is, like, weirdly narrating. Like, in the saloon. I'm like, how does he know this shit? And I'm like, fine, fuck it, it's Legends. And it keeps going at the end. And I'm like, I guess we'll just do, like, a Scrub-style recap, but this cowboy's singing. And I'm like, I guess that's just their thing. And then they get the, I told you we can't keep the recapping cowboy. And I'm like, okay, so the entire time, okay.
No.
But I just didn't really, you know, I didn't see that last little bit of, like, no, they totally brought it, like, that was intentional in that, like, in-show.
I know. That was delightful. Yeah, no,
they should keep the recapping singing cowboy, however.
Me too. I was like, hey, what, really? Come on, Ava. let them keep the cowboy. Yeah, and I kept on waiting, actually, for some, like, anything more with that. Like, why is this guy narrating? Is he just narrating this? Is he narrating that? And I'm like, okay, they're just doing it because. It's a fuck it, why not thing. And, yes, much respect to them.
I do appreciate that, again, in full Legends form, like they did with the monitor. Well, we have to have this guest star on. Fuck you.
Yeah, I kind of love that. It's like, because you know, the show comes on, and I saw, you know, I knew David Ramsey was directing this episode, and I saw him pop up in the credits, and I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to get, like, a John Diggle appearance. And then then I'm like, oh, we're going to get John Diggle pretending to be Bass Reeves. And I'm like, no, we're just getting Bass Reeves, I guess, and we're going to get Sarah actually pointing out that he looks, kind of pointing out, like, that he looks like John. And it was, like, bizarre. But I have to say, and the mustache was so fucking dumb, and I loved it.
Well, and again, like, it hit me exactly like the, like, well, every episode's going to have the monitor doing something at the end of the season.
Yep.
And it's like in Legends, it's just, he's just watching this bullshit, eating popcorn. I'm just like, what is he? Okay. And this hit me the same way. It's like, you know, well, all the shows are going to have, you know, like, David Ramsey on, and it's going to be, you know, Diggle, and he's going to be dealing with the shit. And it's like, well, technically, they got the name in.
Yeah.
I
think that's the thing with Legends. It's like, everything that's, like, really sort of important for the other Arrowverse shows, for Legends it's just like random bullshit, and they're just like, we don't care. And then they'll just say, yeah, this is a crossover or whatever else, which I mean, they
do get so meta too with like the whole like, oh, it's a finale. Like they just, like they never come out and actually say we know we're on a TV show, but they do.
Exactly.
Like this is where we're going to eventually get, like my big hope is that they come back and we're going to, I mean, as sad as it is that we're going to have to replace Mick, I guess we don't, we have enough cast members, but that we can replace Mick with goddamn Ambush Bug because who's going to notice? Like, I guess that's why you don't do it, right? Because it's not a funny joke.
Fair enough.
Ambush Bug comes in, he's like, hey, did you know we're in a TV show? And they're like, yes. What the fuck are you doing? It's just like, I guess there's no point in me being here.
Although I really would like to see that happen, like just that scene alone.
Yeah. Yeah. Just walks back off. Yeah. Still have no reasoning for this entire season of Gideon being bloodthirsty. And I kind of hope they never explain it.
Yeah. I thought they were like going to like drop some reveal, but it's more and more seeming like they're just like, now let's
it's post-crisis.
Gideon, yeah. Just let's have Gideon be sort of like, weirdly sort of quietly threatening or you know terrifying. I'm like, sure, that's fine.
Right. I'm into it.
Exactly.
Oh God. And I do think that the whole like the milkshake and the strawberry the cherries thing is the first sign that what's his face is in Sarah's head.
Oh, Bishop.
Not an alien thing? Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite possible. Yeah.
Because the way Ava asked you know, Gary, and he was like, well, was one of those, not an alien, but, you know?
Something. Yeah.
Oh, hi, Pants. Sorry if you hear the cat screaming at me.
That's all right.
Being needy.
Yeah, we've got that here, too. But yeah, no, that's a definite possibility. And they can't do away with that character just so easily, I think.
Right.
They need to bring back, if not Rafi Barzulian, but at least that character to like you know threaten everybody once more.
Yep. And I'm sure somehow it'll tie in with John getting his magic back. Like that's.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, although you know, I really wish that we had more to do for, by and large, for Mick in these episodes.
Yeah,
like I just find it's just hard not to notice the fact that they just tend to have him like at the beginning and end of most of these things. Just like here he is, there he goes. Here he is, there he goes.
I'm with you. It's a choice.
Yeah.
It's not a good choice, but it's a choice.
Exactly. But anyway, yeah. No, good.
Yeah.
A fine episode of Legends. And it's always, I know, I love their Western episodes anyway. It's just something, they just seem really at home whenever they have to put on cowboy hats.
Yeah, for whatever reason, it just works for them.
Mm. So anyway.
Anyway.
I watched a movie.
Yes, you did. I have been waiting for this.
It is called The Tomorrow War. It is likely one of the stupidest films I think I've seen in a long, long time, but it's not that it's just stupid. It's weird on so many levels, and I just and it's hard to quantify, or maybe not qualify, but certainly quantify all the weirdnesses going on. And one of them, we should start with Chris Pratt's face.
Yeah,
He gets it under control as the movie goes on because it morphs into different genres as the movie progresses. But especially in the beginning part of the movie, like the perhaps the first 40 minutes or so, it's amazing that his face, I'm not sure if it's the direction or it's just like that Pratt is sort of essentially out of his depth in a lot of situations.
Sure.
But his face is always doing like five different things and making all these different expressions, but they've got nothing to do with the actual lines that he's speaking or the tone of any given scene that he's in. So it's just its own sort of spectacle watching him sort of like cycle through different expressions, trying to like feeling like he's trying to land on the right one for a given take, but never quite doing it. Once it becomes like a future action thing, he sort of settles into that sort of weird sort of like action man face that he puts on. And it's, that looks ridiculous, but it's still, it's at least it's consistent. And as I've said on, and as I said on Twitter, this movie's a thought experiment. Say, what would happen if Burt Macklin, FBI, was actually a movie star and actually got cast in a Hollywood blockbuster? That the Tomorrow War would be the result.
Gotcha. Yikes.
Yikes is the word. But I know you wanted to, you had something Chris Pratt face related to say as well.
No.
Oh, you just wanted to hear
I just wanted to hear about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I don't know any other way to put it, but just it's really fascinating to watch him try to figure out the scene as it's happening. But the scene isn't complicated. Like you, all he needs to be is like the good dad who wants more out of his life. Cause that's basically what his character is. He's a good guy. He's a high school teacher, but he wants to be like a trailblazing scientist, but he's stuck as a high school teacher. But then the future war happens in which for some reason, 30 years in the future, or 28 years in the future, people come back and say, hey, we can only come back to this point in time, and the only way we can win this war, although we probably won't, is to grab, conscript like civilians and basically throw them at aliens in the future. And it is incredibly unsuccessful because most of them die. But they keep doing it, and it's just so weird because it feels like a different kind of movie briefly, because it takes place in 2022. That's where it starts.
Okay.
And everybody, like when the future war soldiers show up, they capture the attention of all of America because they show up during a pro soccer match.
Sure.
And everybody is watching soccer. Somehow I'm like, is this an alternate America where people enjoy soccer? It was really bizarre. And like it's not just like a passing detail. Like there's a big party at the main character's household, and he and his daughter are watching it, and everybody else is like glued to the screen, like, hey, what's, are they gonna score the goal? And of course not, because you know that's soccer, you know. And the stadium is full of people. I'm like, they must have worked out some kind of sponsorship deal with the Pro Soccer Association, because this doesn't make any sense. Like it's just a weirdly off detail. But there are a couple other things I loved about this movie though. One is that they when they're gathering everybody, all these conscripting these civilians into the future war, like they're all sort of like around 40 and up, because as Pratt figures out, they all have to be dead in the future so they don't create a paradox by being in a time frame. But there's all kinds of weird rules that they never explain, and I kind of like the way they're unexplained. Like they take some of their clothes, but like let them use like others, and like one guy's going, there's a guy over there in a chef's hat, and they didn't take that. And the camera cuts to a guy in full tactical gear and like chef's whites with a chef's hat just standing there, and I'm like, okay, this is the movie I want to see. Like a bunch of like soccer moms and like line cooks fighting alien monsters, and unfortunately they have like, you know, character work to do, so they can't do that too much, but that would have been delightful. But the person who points it out is played by the actor Sam Richardson, He's he's comic relief, and he's great. But do you recall, like a couple of weeks ago, I sent you that that I think you should leave skit, where Sam Richard, like the night Scrooge saved Christmas, when Sam Richardson literally breaks through the wall saying, "Scrooge, you have to come to the future to fight the Bone Armies with me." It's the same plot as the Tomorrow War.
Wow.
Like, it's, how did you do this in like 5 minutes as opposed to like two plus hours?
Yikes.
It is absolutely hilarious. But there are even some plot points in those 5 minutes that the Tomorrow War takes, which makes me think that Richard Sim was working on the movie at that point and got the idea. Like, Ern just sort of like was riffing on it. So, yeah.
That's, I don't know, man.
And the other thing about the film is that it keeps switching up genres. Like, it starts off like a sort of a Michael Bay-ish blockbuster. Then it becomes this alien sort of monster fighting movie, which is actually not so bad. Like, the middle sections are like pretty watchable. And Yvonne Strahovski and Chris Pratt play well together, or at least Strahovski plays well, while Chris Pratt makes that face. But then it seems to end, but there's still about an hour to go. And then it turns into like Galaxy Quest for a while, and then it turns into Alien for a while, and it's fascinating as hell. And I'm going to spoil something for you here.
Sure.
One of the things when you're watching it, and you know that you see their plan to like basically take people from the past and like throw them, as an AV Club reviewer said, Zap Brannigan style, just throwing waves of bodies at these like aliens who just massacre them.
Right.
And you think, why don't they send technology back from the future, get that in place so it can like be used to fight the aliens?
Yeah.
And it turns out this is what Yvonne Strahovski's character is doing. But it's a big secret. And the only person she can trust to bring that technology back to the past, a toxin basically, to kill all the aliens, is Chris Pratt's character. Because there's a relationship between the two that I will not get into. It says, you know, I know you can do it. You're the only one I trust. I'm like, this is a solid plan. Why isn't this like just the plan A?
Right.
So they get the toxin, and they discover the alien spaceship buried under the ice in northern Russia, because climate change will thaw it out, and then the aliens are going to pop out and start eating everybody.
Yeah.
They go there, find the ship, which is like straight up just alien. It's just like straight out of Alien, right down to like a space jockey style dead, you know, pilot. Right. They walk into like a chamber with like about a dozen or so of the aliens in stasis pods and go, oh, they must be like cargo. And then start injecting them with the toxin. But it wakes up all the other aliens immediately. And there are thousands of these fuckers.
Huh.
And then they have to blow up the ship. So the toxin didn't fucking matter at all. As it turned out, there's a big battle at the end where they use the toxin on the queen. But for all intents and purposes, the toxin was just like effectively useless. I'm like, weird. Why did any of this happen?
Yeah.
It's the most insane, absurdly plotted film. But, you know, as vulture critic Bill Gibbery put it, it's just as stupid as it needs to be. But I think it's a little stupider, frankly.
That is fair.
There's a lot more to it, but I won't. But there's...
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people going on about how they've enjoyed it because it is just the big, stupid movie that they wanted it to be.
Yeah, no, it's... I think critical opinion on it turned around really quickly. Like, everybody went from going, this movie sucks, and within days going, wait, this movie rocks. Because it's so dumb. But I think it could have actually been a much better movie. Like, I think enjoying it for its stupidity is fine, but it's frustrating because there's all sorts of ways in which they could have focused on one aspect. They could have, handled like the sort of the tone changes a little bit more cleverly.
Right.
Like it could have been Edge of Tomorrow good instead of Tomorrow War good, which is to say not good at all. And really oddly, they try to make Chris Pratt's character flawed by him finding out that he does bad things in the future, that he leaves his family. But it's like, that's not a character flaw. That's like just a weird bit of information that doesn't track with anything we've seen.
Right.
So it's like, you're not overcoming anything. You're just like everything that's possibly bad about this character, because somebody said, well, he's got to have flaws, just is shunted off into this area where it can't possibly matter at all. And never comes to pass anyway.
Huh.
So it's a very strange thing. One critic I read said that it was sort of emblematic of Christian movies, where the main character's flaws have to be abstract and not visible on screen, in order for the piety to work properly. So I just found that really a really interesting and odd choice that could have been like really fascinating, but again, it's just got too many things going on to right. be like one good thing.
Oh well.
Yeah, well, that's my thing on Tomorrow War. And yeah, like seriously, between Sam Richardson's like, Night Scrooge Save Christmas and a Burt Macklin FBI sci-fi movie, it is a gigantic, bizarre, multiversal meta movie
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway. Well,
fair.
Yeah, but I really hope they focus on, they have a sequel with the guy in the chef's hat.
Well, there actually apparently is a sequel possibly in the works already.
Oh my
They're
God.
They're discussing it already.
Of course they are. I had a feeling this was going to be really successful when I watched it. I'm like, oh shit. Everybody's watching it just like me.
Yep.
Damn it. We're going to get more.
Yeah. Anyway, on that sad note, we should probably play some music and get out of here this week.
All right. Yeah, let's let the people off easy. All right.
Woo!
Let's hear some guitar. Let's hear some music.